Hit that rooster again. John's been traveling. He needs a couple of these. Hit it again. Hit it again. Hit it again. Good morning, Arizona homeowners. It's Rosie on the house. Second Saturday of the month, so we're talking trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. Welcome back, sir. You've been
quite a busy
traveler.
Yeah, I got up to Detroit this last week or so, and then took a little layover in Kansas City to see my son at school. And it's pretty cool seeing some different trees across this country and seeing some areas where they say they have real trees.
He called me yesterday. I don't know. It was close to 5 o'clock. Might have even been a little after 5. And after about 2 or 3 minutes, I'm like, John, did you just wake up? He's like, yeah.
I had about 4 hours sleep the night before, and I was just when I hit the house at about 4 yesterday afternoon, I just fell down and fell right to sleep.
Well, thank you for being here with us this morning, in spite of your busy week. And you said you've been traveling, and you saw some of these other trees, and your tree of the month.
The tree of the month this month is my very absolute favorite tree. That's because it's the right tree in the right place. I thought after all that we've talked about over the months of the various trees we've covered, and they've been tall, they've been small, they've been broad, they've been little trees, patio trees, large trees, shade trees of every sort and description, it occurred to me yesterday as I was just thinking through all the trees we've talked about, that I need to maybe take a little step back and talk about the right tree in the right place. The Arizona Community Tree Council, in cooperation with Arizona Public Service, put together a really nice brochure several years ago, and it's available online in a PDF. You can print it off or just view it online. It's called Right Tree, Right Place. If you just Google that, Right Tree, Right Place, you'll come up with a couple of really great sites to go to. The first one is the National Arbor Day Association. Second one is the ISA. It's a federal publication that's really, really good. And the third one is Arizona Community Tree Council, APS's bulletin. Every one of those, if you are thinking about buying a new tree, you're wanting to get that perfect tree. You've heard our descriptions over the last several months about this tree and that tree, but you're wondering, well, where's the application? Well, these guidelines, this one in particular from Arizona Community Tree Council, will give you some help in making that perfect tree selection. It will talk about the height of the tree, the canopy spread at maturity, whether the tree is deciduous or not, whether it's going to be dropping its leaves in the winter or not, the basic shape of the tree. You know, there's all the architectural shapes. You have very columnar trees that are going to be great for a narrow application. You'll have wide, broad spreading trees that are good if you want to cover a broader area. You'll have ones that are appropriate under power lines.
Well, I have a question.
What's that?
What do you call the shape of a mature Aleppo pine?
Spreading.
I call it Phyllis Diller. Aleppo pine has a bad hair day every day.
Well, it's interesting because Aleppo pines are unique in that they're one of the only pines that doesn't have apical dominance. That is, it doesn't have a central leader that doesn't have competition from the lateral branches. If you look at all of our conifers, Doug firs and ponderosa pines and Italian cypress, they have a central leader that is always dominant in the top of the tree. So
we call that the trunk.
Right, you'll have a pyramidal shaped tree, just like a cone shaped tree.
Yes.
Well, interestingly, when Aleppo pines reach about 12 years of age, they give up apical dominance. The central leader no longer dominates the tree, and the tree gives the side branches permission to compete with the central leader.
It's the goofiest looking
tree.
So
you have a cloud-shaped tree at maturity, but it's beautiful in the landscape. If you look across and you see our pines in our city landscapes, you'll see the Canary Island pine trees. You'll see the Afghan pines, the Eldericas, and they're all very pyramidal in shape, you know, very cone-shaped. And then you'll see these cloud-shaped pine trees. That's your Aleppos.
Yeah.
I love them.
When I see an Aleppo pine, one word comes to mind. Frenetic.
Frenetic. Phyllis Diller.
Just all over the place.
Well, we've had some wild names today.
That is a confused tree right there.
But I love when they have them in a row on a horse property. It seems like all the old mature horse properties on the very edge have a row of those pines.
Yeah, I saw one yesterday that's really, really nice. A customer of mine down around 40th Street in Camelback has a beautiful monster Aleppo pine tree. And they do, once they lose that apical dominance and those side branches start sprawling, it's like a big spider. And it's huge. They can get really, really big and ranging. There's another one I saw yesterday, a big Aleppo pine with a monster 3-foot diameter side branch. That's just a side branch, 3-foot diameter coming off the side of the tree. It has started to crack and pull away from the main trunk. So we sent a crew over there yesterday, kind of an emergency, to try to thin out these. We didn't have time to cable it yesterday, but we at least thinned out the end weight of it, because those big side branches, once they start competing for dominance, they start sweeping way out to the side and get taller. And you have to be real careful, because they can develop some cracks and be pretty risky.
They can be a hard tree to find new when you're planting. A lot of most nurseries now are pushing the Afghan pines.
Right, right.
Well, smaller trees, less water. But I mean, to get a new one, the only ones I found, they've come in those big 72-inch boxes. So you've already got a pretty mature tree going in the ground.
Yeah, the Afghan pines, the Eldericas, are really popular. They're really nice shaped trees, a little more predictable in terms of the shape that you're going to get at the end of the day.
I like the non-predictable ones.
Yeah,
a lot.
And what's really nice about the pines that you can get at the nurseries here is they're all adaptable. You know, the Aleppo pine is from Syria, the Afghan pine, of course, from Afghanistan, and these are very arid climates, and so these trees do really well here. They're really drought tolerant, and there's one I saw yesterday at that same house with a big majestic one. There's one in their backyard that's in a construction area. It hasn't had water in 2 or 3 years, and it's just sort of thinned out a little bit. But amazing that it can go without water for the last couple of years, and it's just hanging in there. And it will probably do that for, I said, it could probably sustain a drought for another 3 or 4 years, because those trees that are native to those arid climates in the Middle East that don't get much rain can really handle some stress.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation as we're talking trees. You can text in to 411-923 with a question, or email info@rosieonthehouse.com and attach a picture. I actually have a couple emails here for you. We'll save till later. You want to run through a couple scenarios of the right tree in the right place? Let's pick a subdivision, a lot of subdivisions in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's a quarter acre lot. You get 2,000 square feet in the front, and maybe about 30 feet from the house to the sidewalk. West facing, looking for some shade.
Yeah, you know, the rule of thumb for putting plants into landscapes is to put the lowest, smallest plants at the curbside, and then get progressively larger in overall height as you get closer to the house. That way, from the curb, nothing is upstaging something else. You don't want to put a huge tree right at the curb, blocks your view of the house, you don't enjoy the architecture of the home. Quite often that mistake is made. So be sure you're pushing your trees as close to the home as you can, and then your shrubs, your ground cover, flowers, and so forth as you progress to the curb.
Which is funny, as builders, Rosie will tell you, however tall the tree is going to get, plant it that far away from the home.
Which is a good, this is true. So that being said, put those two together, you'd want a smaller tree. If you have 30 feet from the curb to the house, you're not going to be able to get a ginormous tree, because a large tree, if you want it to be accenting the corner of the house, for instance, you want it to be a medium-sized tree. And there, you know, then you start going through your list of those medium-sized 15 to 20-foot trees rather than your 60 and 80-foot trees, like a eucalyptus or an Aleppo pine.
John and I just finished working on a job together where we had two trees in exactly the wrong place. I mean, were those Aleppos?
Yeah, those are both Aleppo
pines. Horribly ugly Aleppos planted in between two houses. And I'll bet you I've given your name out 20 times in the last 2 months about this concept of tree law. What can your neighbors, what are your rights about what your neighbor's tree is doing to your yard? But we were there actually for a school teacher whose these Aleppo pines were really encroaching in underneath their slab, underneath their storage, underneath their foundation. And You were a little disappointed in the way they trimmed them. I would have just cut them all the way down.
Well, when you said working together, I'm sitting here picturing Rosie with a chainsaw and John with his chipper, mulching it all into the yard.
That's what those trees need, I'll tell you. But John was a little emotionally attached to these trees. They need to go, John.
Well, I don't know. We made an allowance. What we did is these trees were planted way too close to both homes, and the roots got underneath the slab at the neighbor's home, who ended up having to demolish a part of the sidewalk there. But what we did is we came in and we actually trenched alongside the new construction zone, and we installed a root barrier. And this is a polypropylene product that we can drop into a trench alongside an area that you want to protect from root encroachment. And it was, I thought, a good compromise because the neighbors now can keep their trees, which provided some nice shade on that southern exposure to their house. But then their neighbor is going to be happy, too, because they're not going to have any future roots getting underneath any of that new construction. Yeah, you want to be careful. That was a perfect example of a tree in the wrong place. A right tree, but wrong place. You know, there's a place for Aleppo pine here in Arizona, but it's not under power lines or, in this case, 3 or 4 feet away from a house, which is just way too close.
The right tree in the right place. Did we ever decide what the right one for this 30-foot entrance? If it's west-facing for shade, a native tree that really wants to be a bush for sun protection would be a good choice.
Sure, yeah. You know, again, you want to look at, do you want height? Do you want to get it up quickly so it can provide shade to a window? Or do you want a low-lying shrub-like tree like a Lysoloma or a Palo Verde or Mesquite? Lots of those questions, those characteristics are covered in those right tree to right place brochures I talked about online.
And I put them on the quick links at rosieonthehouse.com. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-888-767-4348. After midnight, we're going to lay it on hang down.
Hey, Romy, we got a special guest this morning.
Yes, John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service.
He's always a special guest.
If you'd like to get on the line and talk to him, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. We have Ted with a question on a sisu tree. And I actually have some emails over here on the sisus. That was...
It stirred up a little hornet's nest.
Oh, my goodness. Town, yes, it did.
I have another special guest I'd like to talk to first, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
I have Mr. Jeff Whitney, our Arizona State Forester from the Arizona Department of Forestry and Management with us.
Cool.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you this morning?
Hey, Jeff. Terrific. This is John Eisenhower. How are you?
John, it's so nice to hear your voice. Thank you for everything you do for us.
Yeah, and you too.
We've got Romy, Rosie, and John in studio covering trees this morning, so I thought it'd be appropriate to have you on as our guest for a few minutes this morning. We just came off Arbor Day, and so we've been talking a lot about this idea of urban forest, which to me that's kind of a new term, but maybe it's an old term. But why don't you explain to us, first tell us what you do, what your main role is.
Well, I'm privileged to be your state forester. The Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management has a number of different programs. In statute, primarily one of our fundamental roles is the prevention and suppression of wildfire, but we also have a whole suite of forestry programs, not only tending to and managing the state trust lands that are forested, and working closely with our cooperators that have forest and woodlands in the state. But we also have a number of programs that are federally funded in support of our state programs in urban and community forestry. And we've got a number of different programs there. Insect and disease is a big issue. But we do an awful lot of things in the urban environment and with communities. 40 years ago this year, the Arbor Day Foundation started a program called Tree City USA. And living in the desert, and even up in northern Arizona, the higher elevations, wherever it's forested, I think we all have a deeper appreciation than most Americans when it comes to shade. And so we, you know, we're blessed to live in an environment that a lot of people come, you know, spend a lot of money to come visit. But shade in the desert communities is incredibly important, as you all know.
Well, looking at the list of things that trees do for our communities, kind of in honor of Arbor Day and this idea of tree cities, I mean, it slows traffic, it removes carbon dioxide from the air, it adds oxygen, cuts down on UV radiation and noise, increases property values. I mean, it's a big bang for your buck when you put in trees, just on all levels.
And I think John or Romy can talk to this as well, but the economic benefit of trees, I just came back from a Council of Western State Foresters meeting up in Portland this week, and we're looking at performance measures across the country, all of the states, in conjunction with the USDA Forest Service, one of our federal partners. And we were in Portland, Oregon, and had some great presentations, some great discussion, but the economic value of trees in municipalities is phenomenal. I'm doing a lot of work with some folks in my hometown, Wickenburg, where I grew up, and you know, we're having these conversations about the utility and the benefit and the economic value in return, as well as the aesthetic value of having a shade and you know, vegetation.
Well, I wanted to congratulate Romy, actually, particularly in this segment, because he won an award, the Palo Verde Award for Urban Forestry Enhancement, and it has to do with the work he has done along with John in getting people aware of this with the Tour de Trees and different functions that they've participated in.
You know, I was so happy this year. This was my second Arbor Day event. I've only been your state forester for about 14, maybe 16 months now. But Romy got the award for the Palo Verde Award this year for Urban Forest Enhancement. And that award is given to an exceptional business who provides innovative leadership or contributions of talent and effort to enable the achievement of sustainable community forestry efforts at a local or state level. And so well-deserved, Romy.
Congratulations, Romy. How about the connection? Scottsdale is one of the first.
Well, it is the first. So, a tree city, there's 29 in Arizona. The very first one was Scottsdale, of all towns, believe it or not. And that was 34 years ago. It became a tree city the same year I was born.
And in the city you were born.
Right.
And I don't know anything about that, but I'll bet dimes to donuts Benny Gonzalez had something to do that with the trees he brought into the parking lots of City Hall. It was an innovative design at the time. It made the parking lots one of the most beautiful parts of town.
There are some pretty strict criteria to become a Tree City USA. You have to apply and you have to meet a very high number of criteria, including having certified arborists on staff, having a commitment to specific maintenance practices that will be sustainable. And it's really a difficult achievement. It's really neat to see 29 of our cities in the state of Arizona have become tree cities.
And Jeff had said a lot there about the award and everything, but I mean this award, the Palo Verde thing, doesn't come to Rosie on the House without John Eisenhower in the Talking Trees segment. And our broadcasts at the different tree climbing contests, whether it was at NAU or Boyce Thompson or walking around the Tour de Trees campus or out there at the Champion Juniper on Granite Mountain. I mean, this is John's award, not Rosie.
Well, congratulations to both of you.
No, that's awesome. Thank you.
Weekly newsletter. It's filled with timely gardening and home improvement advice, as well as special offers and discounts you can't find anywhere else. That's RosieOnTheHouse.com. It's the Rosie on the House Show.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with Rosie on the House. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-888-767-4348. 1-888-ROSIE for you. Ted's not on. He dropped. He was the one with the Sisu question. We'll address that. We also have calls from Tempe and Brazil. Oh, I'm sorry. Tempe. These orders are different.
Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah. So we'll get to them all.
Well, that's great. I wanted to add a little bit to what Jeff shared about that award. The Palo Verde Award is really a great award, and it's much deserving to be given to you, Romy. I just wanted to say that on behalf of the Arizona Community Tree Council, you've just been a real advocate and a real supporter, attending all the conferences every year to the Arbor Day events. And it's just been a privilege working with you and seeing your passion for trees. You're becoming a regular tree geek, you know? It's really great. And love to see your support. And just on behalf of the ACTC and the Arizona State Land Department as well, thanks a lot for all your support for trees in Arizona.
Oh, my pleasure. It's kind of something I learned from Rosie when I was given the responsibility of the Outdoor Living Hour and developed the topics. I thought, well, you know, I need to learn more about this. And
you jumped right in.
Rosie went to, in construction, the Remodelers Advantage, and National Association of Remodelers. He got involved in all these trade associations. So I thought, well, what trade associations are there? So there's got involved with the Arizona Nursery Association, Arizona Farm Bureau, Arizona Community Tree Council. There's more I'd like to do. The Arizona Department of Agriculture, there's only so much you can dedicate to and focus at a time. So I was glad those resources were there, and I've really enjoyed being a part of them.
And your thumb is getting greener by the day.
Yes, it is. He's always had the greenest in the family.
Well, let's address sisu trees before we get to our calls, because it's taken up a lot of our time responding to the sisu tree questions.
Well, and maybe rightly so. And maybe the warning needs to go out again over the airwaves today that sisus come with a warning, buyer beware. They're a great tree in the right place, but those places, in my mind, are very, very few and far between. You need to be very cautious when you put sisus in, because they're very aggressive rooting trees, and they send up small trees from the root system that's spreading out into your yard. All of a sudden, you'll see new little sprouts coming up. And if you don't want those trees where they're sprouting, it's almost impossible to eradicate them. So you've got to be very, very careful. These trees have led to many lawsuits across the country. Dr. Ed Gilman from the University of Florida considers them an invasive species. They're outlawed in Florida where he lives, and I'd have to verify this. The city of Phoenix has put a moratorium on them. They're not allowed to be planted, at least in the city of Phoenix, through the city of Phoenix. And I think they're discouraging homeowners from planting them for those reasons I just mentioned.
You can find John's article on sisus, and it's important to note, John, you do have sisus at your home.
I do.
I planted one. Became under attack from a few people, and
well, it's kind of cool because it's in an area that we don't water, so it's been very, very slow growing, and it's kind of under control. I just, you know, again, I keep it under wraps, and I'm not going to be just watering it and making it go crazy. But yeah, we have an article on the website. If you do have sisus, you're trying to deal with the root problems that are growing up in your lawn or growing up in other parts of your yard. In my dealings with this tree over the last several years, I put together an article that will give you step by step on your options in trying to deal with that problem.
Very good. And we put it on the quick links as well, along with the right plant and right tree at rosieonthehouse.com. Just look on the right-hand side, and both those PDFs will be right there in the quick links. Let's get to Bob with the Brazilian pepper tree question. Good morning, Bob.
Hi. I have three Brazilian peppers that I planted about 2 years ago on some advice from a local nursery. They're relatively close to a fence, like they're only about 3 feet off the fence. And I keep them crowned and trimmed as best I can, but I'm concerned about the roots being that close to the fence. And you mentioned a root barrier, and I'd like your comments about the proximity of those to a fence, a block fence, and whether or not I should put a barrier against the stem wall on the fence.
And how long ago did you put the trees in?
About 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
So they're about
3 or 4 inches in diameter on the trunks?
Yeah, they're about that. And then, you know, I crown them at about 15, 18 feet.
Well, it might be a little bit late in the game, but maybe not. If they're that young, you might be able to trench down with some hand tools, a Pulaski and a trenching shovel, and actually dig a trench along as close to the wall as you can, right up against the concrete footing, and then install a root barrier. It's still young enough in the life of those trees that I would think it might be worth considering. On the other hand, Brazilian peppers are not really aggressive rooting trees. They're if I was going to plant a tree close to a hardscape element, that would have been one of our trees on a short list of trees that are pretty good. They're a manageable tree. It's not going to be like a mesquite or a hybrid Palo Verde or a eucalyptus or something that's going to immediately outgrow that space. In fact, if it was one of those tree varieties, a more aggressive tree, I'd probably tell you to think about taking the trees out and starting over because of the risk to the wall. It's just a matter of time before some trees will definitely to grow and send roots underneath that wall footing and start cracking your masonry. A root barrier might be a good option for you.
And explain to me how a root barrier works, because I don't understand. If you're putting the barrier all the way against the concrete footing, isn't that it seems to me like you're too late there. You would want the barrier away from the concrete footing to keep the roots from getting there. Is the barrier itself strong enough against the concrete that it'll protect the concrete?
Yeah, it does. It's a root deflector, and you're wanting to protect the roots from getting to the concrete. So as soon as the roots hit the plastic barrier, they will be diverted away, and they generally will be traveling sideways. If you remember, roots need oxygen to metabolize it, and they for them to be to grow, they to survive, they have to have a certain 8 to 14% ambient oxygen in the soil. So roots don't want to go down. The further down they go, the less oxygen there is. So roots are always growing at the optimum depth of soil. 80% of a tree's roots in the top 18 inches of soil, 50% in the top 6 inches of soil. And that's just because there's oxygen and water available at those depths. So we drop the barrier down where we below the depth where we think roots are going to go at all. And the soil is like I said, has less oxygen. It's more compacted at the deeper levels. And roots will generally then go sideways when they hit the barrier. And we don't mind if roots go sideways along a wall, you know, right up against a wall. But they're not going to dive down under the barrier, back up, and get underneath the wall. That's the challenge. On larger trees, we drop the barrier down 3 feet. So we have, you know, barriers in various depths of soil depending on the size tree you have and the range of soil that the roots are going to be in.
1-888-767-4348. Let's squeeze one more call in. I know you want to get to tree staking. Let's see if we can't help Lavana.
Lavon,
good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Oh, I live in Tempe. The back of my home faces south, and I have a two-story home behind me. I have a planting area behind my back, which is bricked in, about 4 feet wide. I would like to plant sour orange trees, and I'm concerned about the root system, as my neighbor has citrus trees and planted about a foot from her wall, and the wall is breaking. So I'm wondering if I have enough space to do that, if I keep them pruned.
Well, keeping them pruned may not necessarily prevent the roots from, moving out into those areas and filling that small planting space. You know, this is a constant struggle with all of our, customers over the years is trying to fill small spaces with trees that won't outgrow that spot. One of our customers I saw yesterday has a mesquite tree that was planted in a 4-foot planter box on her back patio, which she just paved with some expensive Italian tile, and now all the tile are lifted, and it's just been a couple of years now, and she has a tiger by the tail, and it's unfortunate because I think the tree's going to have to be removed. And then, of course, some repairs done to her pavers. So I really don't. It's hard to answer that question, without seeing that planting space. Citrus is a really good choice. Actually, it's not a real aggressive large trees. So if you're going to put a choose a tree for a small space like that, that's not a bad choice. So you might want to, sometimes people put a tree in knowing that they're going to get 10 years of growth before there's an issue, and then maybe deal with that down the road, maybe remove those trees and replace after a certain period of time, get the benefit of the trees. And then the other option would be to consider a tall shrub like a hopseed or a Tacoma, one of your orange jubilees or yellow bells, something like that that's going to be less aggressive rooting and yet will give you the height that you want. So there's some other shrub options you might want to think about in a small space like that.
Summer's coming. What do we need to know for our trees?
Well, lots to think about. You know, when preparing your trees for summer, we have a really great blog on our website that will, there's four main considerations. We want to first think about tree selection, which we covered pretty thoroughly today, planting properly, and staking and guying. Your smaller trees, you want to be able to give them a little preparation time now in May and June, anticipating some higher winds later this summer. Might be a good time to install a small guying system that'll hold your tree in place and keep it from going over in a storm. Of course, staking systems are only designed to allow as a fail-safe, to prevent the tree from a catastrophic failure. You don't want to be holding it so rigidly that it can't move in the wind. You want to be able to allow it to move on the staking system slightly to keep the roots active in the soil, but yet firm enough to keep the tree from falling over in high winds. Second, be aware of the irrigation issues. If we are anticipating some heavy winds, you might want to shut the water off. The last thing you want to do is have a soaked area around your tree and have the entire root ball come up. And if the soil is relatively dry, those roots are going to be able to hold in the soil a lot more firmly and keep the tree upright. The last thing is to prune. Pruning is, like we did on that big Aleppo pine yesterday, is a preventive measure to reduce the end weight so that when the wind is blowing through that canopy, it's not acting like a sail on a ship and pulling that tree over or pulling that branch down. So some nice, and you don't want to be gutting the inside of the tree, lion tailing. This is not the method we recommend. You need to thin your tree out incrementally along the entire length of the branch so it looks natural, it's not stripped out, and you're alleviating some of the end weight out on the ends of the branches. That's the most critical area of foliage to be removed. So you have a nice distribution of foliage. The tree's going to be safe and hopefully get you through the summer.
Straight to the calls. This segment starts with B in Tucson on a privet tree. Good morning, B.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I picked up a privet tree 2 years ago from Home Depot, and they told me it would be a good tree for a container, and I think they called it a Texanum, but it has the glossy leaves. Mm-hmm. Of another one, so I wasn't sure, but it doesn't it just doesn't seem to be happy. It's not growing good. I put a fertilizer stick in it and it doesn't bloom, and I just don't know what's wrong with it.
And what is it, getting full sun?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I was container planting is really awesome. You know, I just put a little Meyer lemon in a big container at my house just a few months ago, and we're loving it. But you know, container planting is a challenge because you have limited planting space, and it's hard sometimes in our hot weather to be able to keep enough moisture in there without overwatering them. And you have to monitor them carefully because the water, you know, pours right through the light textured soil planting medium, and before you know it, you've got the trees are struggling, and it's just difficult to keep container plants doing well, unless of course they're in a protected environment. Privet trees, although they can take full sun at maturity, when they're younger, might appreciate a little bit of protection from a full day of sun. You might want to think about, if you can, to move the tree into a little bit of shelter for at least part of the day. If you can protect it from late afternoon sun, that might give it a little bit of a breathing space until it might get a little more established and you can move it. Is it a planter you can move around, or is it in a...
It's very large. I can't move it. I would have to have a couple men come over to move it. It's very heavy. But it's putting out new foliage right now. What I do is I water it, and I give it a lot of water, and then it has a big saucer, and I take the little indoor-outdoor shop vac and take the excess water out of it when the water has run through. So
yeah, well, you might want to just
water.
Yeah, you might want to decrease the dosage so you just barely get water coming into that saucer at the bottom. And again, you know, with the light textured soil, you're probably leaching out a lot of the nutrients regularly. So you might need to augment, like you said, with a bit of fertilizer. And you know, it's still pretty early in the game. I would give the tree another year or two and see if it's does better. But best of luck to you. I hope you don't have to replace that tree. It's a good choice. The nursery gave you good advice. It is a nice smaller tree that should do well in a planter.
And for Tucson, there's a resource there locally for you called Get Potted. It's a woman by the name of Marley Pan, P-A-N-G-M-A-N, and she does classes on potted gardening.
Container gardening, great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So look her up. We'll get you her resource to you as well. Let's stay in Tucson and bring Pierre into the conversation on mesquite trees. Go ahead, Pierre.
Hi. I've got two medium-sized mesquite trees. I'm going to be cutting them down because they're threatening a foundation and a pool. So I was wondering, if I cut them down all the way down to the soil level, do I need to do anything or much to the root system that's going to be remaining, or can I just bury them up and...
Yeah, mesquite trees, if there's any available water, they will resprout and send up some new shoots from that cut stump. It might be advisable if you can either dig out the stumps by hand or have them ground out mechanically, or you can treat them with a contact herbicide. We've done this several times when we had a limited space and we didn't want to take the extra time to try to dig them out. You can dig around them and then cut below the soil grade and then treat them with a contact herbicide, something like Roundup Pro. It needs to be a commercial grade, full-strength glyphosate-based herbicide to kill the stump, and then you can safely cover it and shouldn't have any problems after that.
We appreciate the call. Tom on a mesquite tree in North Scottsdale, hang tight. We'll get your question off the air as we wrap up our Talking Trees Hour. That was quick. And any final thoughts? And I'm going to say one more time, congratulations on your Palo Verde Tree Award. That was a Talking Trees Award. That wasn't that was a group effort.
Well, it was a lot of fun this last couple of years. Final words today would just feel free to give us a call if you have any questions tree-related at 602-788-0005.
iTreeservice.com.
You got it.
Sign up for the Rosie on the House weekly newsletter. It's filled with timely gardening and home improvement advice, as well as special offers and discounts you can't find anywhere else. That's RosieOnTheHouse.com.